Attention tadpoles. You are now listening to the host of Where I Belong, the Frog King himself, David Corbo.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Where I Belong. My guest today is Agustino Zoida, a stand-up comedian and host of the Homeschooled podcast. And your co-host is Kevin Lyons, am I right?
Yeah, you got it.
What's going on, brother? Happy to have you. It's an honor to have you here. Thanks for taking the time and doing this.
Thanks for being a professional.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate the sentiment. Dude, I'm just getting over being terribly sick. I had the flu hit me, and I like never get the flu. I also don't get the flu shot, so I don't know if there's any kind of correlation there. But I get the flu, right?
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, after I'm done with like the fever and everything, I get strep. I get hammered with strep throat, and then and then all of a sudden, a straight up ear infection.
Yeah. Oh, bro, that's the worst.
Yeah, I haven't been this sick, like, complete bitch mode, like, in the fetal position most of the time, under blankets, just, like, shivering and sweating and shivering and sweating and drinking NyQuil.
Did you do anything different this time? Like, did you actually get a flu shot this year or no?
No, I never get a flu shot because my reasoning is just that I never get the flu. So I'm like, why am I going to go out and get the goddamn thing if I've got a pretty clean track record?
Yeah.
But I have a three-year-old. And so my three-year-old gets, like, he gets pink eye first, and then he gets a fever, and we get him treated real quick, but then my wife starts getting strep throat, and I'm good. This is going on for, like, two weeks, dude, and then I'm good somehow. They get healthy, and then all of a sudden, boom, just hammered. So I think it's just kind of unavoidable. You're, like, in this petri dish of fucking bacteria bouncing around the house.
You know what, man? I'm one of those guys that just – I don't do flu shots because I think that there's some kind of conspiracy behind it.
Fuck like, yeah.
I really do. I really think that it's like – you know, there's no way they want us to be healthy and give it away for free. You know, there's just no way.
Yeah, but, right? It's like a lot of other things. Most things you have to pay for. Why is the flu like
the flu shot
unique?
The flu shot's free, and, like, they're selling it as, like, yeah, everyone has to get your vaccination, but it's like, nah, man, like, the pharmaceutical companies make money as long as we're sick, and I feel like that, I don't know, I just don't do it. I'm a half-assed conspiracy theorist, and I just...
right, that's enough. It's like, yeah, I mean, that kind of goes against the, what's it called, like the making money plan, you know what I mean? Everything else, financially, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Man, and then also, you said you had an ear infection. I've been deaf in my right ear for a little over a year now, October of 2017.
What the fuck?
Yeah, man. And I thought it was an ear infection for a long time because it happened, like, you know, around flu season. And I went to go get, like, checked out. I've had a bunch of people look at it, and then I finally started seeing specialists. I had a bunch of specialists look at it, bro, and they finally told me that, like, I burst an eardrum from, like, yelling too loud on stage.
Oh, wow.
I'm really loud on stage, and I'm always yelling on stage, and plus, like, the speakers, they told me I probably blew it.
And, wow.
So we're basically waiting. A lot of them tell me that it probably could just come back. It'll heal itself over time.
But dude, do you miss it?
What?
I said, do you miss it?
Yeah, definitely. And in the beginning, it was really bad because it was always numb, probably because it just burst.
Right.
And so it was always really weird, really numb. And then the numbness went away, and it was just the hearing never came back. And I obviously, you know, you miss it. But, I mean, I can hear, thank God, out of the other ear. And at first, it was really hard on stage. Do you do comedy at all?
No, I don't do stand-up.
Okay. So it's really uncomfortable because when you're on stage, you know, you really rely on your own hearing for just so you can hear your tonality and you can hear your – where you breathe, you know, your breathing has to be in the right spot. Otherwise, you'll mess up the joke and you'll mess up the flow. And you have to hear the audience reaction, of course. And the first few weeks of not being able to hear myself on one side, it really screwed up my performance.
And that, I feel like getting a sense for the audience, too. It's like I hear a lot of comedians say things like the entire set could be going awesome, but if there's like two assholes in the crowd that just aren't feeling it, you'll focus in on those two assholes. So like if you can't hear everybody on the right side of the fucking room, you got like, no idea how it's being received.
All the assholes on my right side, everybody else you can stay on my left.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, did that fuck with your equilibrium at all? Like, did you feel maybe off balance or anything like that?
I got really bad vertigo for a while. I would feel off balance. But that all went away. And then what hurt me the most is just performing. It's just, you know, that's my livelihood. And it just really screwed with me. And I've gotten used to it by now. So I'm just performance-wise back to normal.
Right. Man, I hope I don't fucking lose my – that would suck. When was the last time you were, like, violently ill?
Man, probably not that long ago. Maybe right before Christmas. I think I got pretty bad. I think I had a bad flu, like, right before Christmas.
You know, I kind of thought that you were going to say, like, a long time ago. Because to me, it's like, you know, I'm on the East Coast. I'm in Jersey. So we have winter, like, brutal winter. And I'm like, if it wasn't for fucking winter, bro. If I was just someplace sunny and warm, I would never get the fucking flu. But I guess that's not the case.
No, man, I get it. I get it out here. You, I guess I should take the flu shot. Nah. I often, dude. I really do get it often. I've always gotten it since I was a kid, though.
You guys just got snow over there, right? I heard in Calabasas it was snowing.
I didn't see any. I literally have an office in Calabasas. That's where I was coming from tonight. And
you didn't see shit?
I didn't see snow yesterday. It was hail. Okay.
Fucking fake news.
Yeah. Which, I mean, technically frozen water is technically snow. So I guess you could say hail is snow. But like, bro, I've seen hail before. It was just hail.
Right.
So people in LA are like, oh my God, it snowed. It's like, that's not snow.
Freaking the fuck out though. What was the temperature for that to happen?
What was the temperature?
Yeah.
Yesterday was 45 degrees in the daytime, which is very, very cold for us.
Yeah.
We don't usually get that cold in the daytime. And then what's funny is a lot of my friends and family are in Massachusetts, and I always check, you know, on your phone, you can have multiple weather.
Right, cities. Right.
And I always check Massachusetts, and we were the same as Massachusetts yesterday, which is fucking crazy.
I do that same thing, but it's only to get myself pissed off. Like when the weather's bad over here, I'll look at fucking Texas. And I'll get pissed off. Like, Houston, Texas is 70-something degrees and sunny. I'm like, fuck you. So it's really only to bum myself out.
It just scares me because it has to do with global warming, of course, I think, you know. And
probably.
Every year, L.A. is breaking records of cold. Like, this is the coldest it's been in L.A., which means that we're going to break records for heat. So when the summer comes, summer's going to come hard, bro. Last year, we got to, like, 120, I think.
Right. Oh, Jesus Christ.
We're going to be hitting 150 before you know it. And
oh, my God. Summer's coming all over you guys.
Yeah, bro. I hate it. I absolutely hate the heat. I'll take the cold any day.
But you've lived here your whole life, right?
I have, yeah. I've lived here my whole life. But, I mean, I travel for work, and I really prefer the cold.
Right.
When it gets, I love the winter when it gets cold here and it rains here. It's so nice in L.A., man.
This is just a matter of switching shit up because over here, it's like when it gets cold, it's fucking debilitating. And then we get blizzards on top of it. And, you know, I'm outside shoveling fucking 3 feet of snow and just like, I don't know. I don't like cleaning up after nature. I'm done with that shit. But I guess it's just a matter of where you grow up. It's nice to have seasons, though, right? Like, it's nice to, like, for me, when summer comes, dude, it's like, it's bizarre the feeling that you get because those first few warm days, you'll like step out into the sun and just close your eyes and let it warm your face. And you'll look around and your neighbors are standing outside like psychopaths staring up at the sun, you know, with their eyes closed or whatever, just taking it in. But it's like that appreciation because if you go to Florida, like nobody gives a fuck that it's warm out. They're done with that shit.
Yeah. The grass is always greener, dude.
Exactly.
But shit, man, like I want all seasons. Like I would appreciate, you know, a winter, a summer, a spring, but in LA, bro, it just goes from cold to hot and that's it. Like, watch, dude, March, we're going to be 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
Promise you, March and April. And then starting like May, June, we're going to have our summer temperatures and it's going to last all the way to Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We got like two seasons here. That's it.
Yeah. You see, it's good in theory to have winter and shit. You know who's done with that, though? Old people. Old people are done with that shit. Old people go to Florida because the fucking cold will kill your ass.
Look at fucking Robert Kraft today, dude.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Robert Kraft is the owner of the New England Patriots, and he got his ass busted in Florida. Dude, why are you going to a rub and tug in Florida?
Because it's warm.
And that's where old people go when they're not working in their offseason.
Exactly.
So, listen, if he was getting a rub and tug in Massachusetts, he's the king of New England. The Boston PD would have been like, we got you, bro. We'll pay for this one. That's another championship ring. But you went to Florida where the Dolphins play, bro. The Dolphins fucking hate you, dude. What are you doing?
I'm not super into sports, but I saw the article, and I'm just like, my immediate go-to is like, let the dude get a fucking hand job. Let it yeah, happen. Dude, let it happen. What's the big deal, man? He got a release.
I feel I'm on either side of the fence because, number one, he's 77 years old, and he's a freaking billionaire. If he wants to have a hand job, let him have a hand job. Plus, his wife passed away. You know, let him have a fucking
please,
job.
Let him beat his sad penis or have somebody beat his sad penis.
On the other hand, his new girlfriend's 39 years old. And I'm like, bro.
She probably talks a lot.
You couldn't just be happy with that? Yeah, I know.
But listen, man, I saw you on Joey Diaz's podcast, and I started listening to your show, the Homeschooled podcast, and it's a great show. You and Kevin have great chemistry. It's super easy to listen to. All your guests seem to have great chemistry with you. I don't know if that's, you know, you just bring the right people on or if you bring that to the table, but I just wanted to say Homeschooled is a great podcast, man, and I listen to a lot of shows, and I listen to a lot of podcasts because I kind of feel like it's my job. And I really enjoy it. It's become one of my regulars at this point.
Oh, that's super nice of you, man. And I'm happy to hear it.
Yeah.
It's nice to be in someone's rotation.
Oh, absolutely, dude. I look forward to the episodes. What's that?
There's so many podcasts. It's like to be in someone's rotation, it's like it's truly like an honor.
Yeah, but you have a lot of those same properties that I like because I like shows that aren't really nailed down to a subject. You know what I mean? Where it's like a niche. I enjoy people that are just having cool conversations and whatever comes up, comes up. And so you fit right into that slot. I'm really into that. But on that note, you just recently did an episode where you celebrated your 10th year in stand-up, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so I wanted to say congratulations to that. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. Who the hell got you into stand-up, man? Because that, to me, it's such a stupid fucking question. It's like, when did you first go and how did you? But it's the most interesting one because I'm like, the balls to, I think about it sometimes and I don't have the ability to dedicate what you need to dedicate. Like, I don't have the ability to sacrifice what stand-up demands from you, meaning just the time and the effort and the traveling and all these other things. I have a little boy and I have to, you know, figure out how to support everybody. And I just know that I couldn't dump myself into it the way that it kind of requires. And for you to like first take that step, first step on that fucking stage, you know, do you remember where you were?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to remember I was 20 years old when I started. So I have a lot less responsibilities than I do now. And then, and that you do.
Right.
I guess who got me into it, I'd have to give credit to my family and friends who just supported me and encouraged me to do it because they knew I wanted to, but I was the one that wanted to do it. I was a huge fan of stand-up comedy, never was a video game kid, you know, not really. You know, my dad was super into like martial arts and UFC and all that stuff, and I never got into it. I just really liked watching stand-up. Never thought I would do it. I just knew I liked it. And one day somebody told me, like, you know, you should be a comic. And they didn't know I was already very passionate about it. And then it just kind of hit me. And I was like, well, maybe I should, you know, put it off for a few more years. When I was like 16, dude, I actually wrote a whole set. I like wrote jokes down. I still have the notebook. Now it's all terrible. None of it got performed. Like, it was all just in my head what I would talk about. I started writing it down. And it was based off of listening to a lot of comedy albums. That's how I knew how to put it together. So if you read it, it would read like a special, probably, like, you know, the bits are all in order. But it was just about doing it, you know. I don't think that you should try to have a career in something because you want to make it your career or you want to be rich or you want to be famous or I'm going to make money off of it. if you think that you want to start stand-up, and I'm not only talking to you, David, you know what I mean? I'm not just saying, I'm not picking on you or anything. For the listeners, like, if you want to do it, just do it because it's fun. You know, there's dads or guys that are responsible for their family's, you know, well-being and providing for their family that have hobbies. And their hobbies are just, you know, whatever the fuck they're into. Sports, you know. I don't know, fucking model cars, whatever the fuck you're into. But like, if stand-up is something you're passionate about, you always wondered, fucking do it, bro. I started at mics, and the mics that I was at, there were old guys coming down. There were lawyers that would just show up after their case. They'd always pop into an open mic, and I'd say, like, do you really want to be a stand-up, like a famous comic? And they're just like, I'm a lawyer. Like, I just want to blow off steam. And them, and they wanted to see if they can do it, and it really does. Like, they get stuff out, you know.
You know what I think is appealing to me about it is I know it's a shitty comparison, but there's moments where, you know, especially around people that you're comfortable with, when suddenly you're holding court and you're just on fire. You're just there's been moments where I'm standing up in front of my friends who are all sat down for, you know, it just happens to be that way. And I've got them all crying, and it's all ideas. It's not like me acting silly or whatever. It's ideas that are coming to me, and, you know, little comparisons and realizations, and, you know, the energy that and it feels amazing. Like, it feels fun.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I think, if anything, would draw me to it, is just the fun that's to be had with it. You know what I mean? And I think you're right in that idea of, like, I don't do the podcast, for example, because I mean, if it ever got successful, fantastic. But I do it because I enjoy it, and I enjoy talking to people, and it makes me feel good to have the podcast and to have, you know, this thing to look forward to, like a hobby. Yeah. And that, you know, that's why I do it, which is, to me, if I ever think about quitting the podcast, it's like, why would I ever quit? I would only ever quit if it stopped making me happy. But yeah. I don't see any way that it would do that, because I continually get to talk to cool people. So as long as that's the deal, then I'm sticking with it. And I think anything would be the same way.
You enjoy it.
Yeah.
Why would you stop? I think about all the time, if I tried to stop stand up, I couldn't, you know. I'm not saying for financial reasons, like, oh, I can go get myself a normal 9-to-5 and just, you know, I could probably move to another state where rent is cheaper. And I would eventually be like, I got to get on stage. You know, I just enjoy it. It's important to enjoy what you do. You don't have to do it for money. And that wasn't a pretty comparison, by the way. That was a great comparison to stand up, because that's exactly what it is engaging a group of people and getting them locked in on you to tell your story. Or you weren't trying to tell them jokes. You were just talking to them on a personal level, and they were relating to you, because obviously they're your friends and you know them. But it's doing that in front of a huge group of people. It's the same thing. It's just harder when you don't know them.
When do you – this is all you do, right? You don't have a day job?
No, I do, man. So I was saying earlier, I have an office job in Calabasas. And
oh, okay.
A couple of different part-time things. Everything's great because it's all seasonal, and it's when stand-up slows down that we get busy. It's like the holidays, and then it slows – day job slows down, and then stand-up picks up all year.
That's perfect.
Yeah, I write for an independent company, and we like punch up scripts and stuff. So I've worked on some really cool TV shows, like It's Always Sunny.
Oh, that's awesome! What a fucking killer show.
Yeah, I worked for like an independent company that was one for a while there. We had an FX contract, so I worked on Baskets, American Horror Story, and Louis, which I don't really say that much anymore.
Right, that one's kind of just tucked away in the back of the resume.
Yeah. But just some punch-up work, and it was really fun.
Yeah, that's cool. That's well, it kind of seems supplementary to what you're doing, because you're around creatives and you're constantly, like, even in your day job, you're still kind of searching your brain for ideas and different angles for things, and so it kind of bleeds over into each other.
Oh, it was great, dude. It really is great. And you know what? Stand up I did because I loved it. I never went to school for script writing. I never thought I would even remotely like it, but I really do like it. I think I'm good at it. Like, I think I could take a script, and I have a little, I don't know, a little hidden talent, I think, out of nowhere. I can just take a script and I can figure out how to make it funnier.
That's great. Well, I guess that I mean, that certainly makes sense. You know, it's your job is to create funniness.
Yeah. Well, it's just doing stand-up for so long, I found out how to take something and analyze it and figure out why it's not working. Mm. What do I need to take out? What do I need to put in? What do I need to edit and move around to make it flow better? You know, stand-up definitely trains you for that.
I hear a lot of people say things like, if you're going to a stand-up class, like you're already fucked, your mindset is in the wrong place. I've heard that so many times, but very recently, I had a friend of mine. She was actually my last guest on the podcast, Jenna Sunday. She's a visual effects artist, and she's a member of a group that we have on Instagram called the Comedy Content Collective, where, you know, I get to sit and watch all these different people that create all these memes and everything, and all these Photoshops and everything. I get to watch them all do it. It's fantastic. But she goes to a stand-up class, and, you know, when you hear that, I was kind of skeptical. And then she sent me like this PDF that her teacher wrote, and it was so formulaic. It was just like, it wasn't teaching you how to be funny. It was teaching you the structure of a joke, just how to train your mind to think in terms of setup and punchline, you know, setup, misdirection, punchline, and then how to take all these things and turn it into a bit. And it was that was the first time I realized, like, oh, there's an actual formula behind this. And then there's this matter of training your brain to think in that way.
Absolutely, dude. There's an algorithm, and it's I don't know if it's training your brain or if it's just a muscle memory once you've been doing it for so long, you know. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you were describing what you read, you're talking my language, bro. That's exactly the terminology that I use applying to my writing every single day. There absolutely is a formula to it. And listen, there is some horrible classes out there. There are some horrible teachers, and there's a lot of people, especially in LA, that just want to take advantage of young kids trying to follow their dream and make some money. You know, there's a guy out there who is like pretty famous. I won't say his name because I don't even know if he's really still around. He was famous for a stand-up class, or at least out here in LA, his name was always around, and he doesn't do stand-up. And that always,
yeah, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, it's really, really strange. But then there are some really cool teachers, you know, and I think what you hear a lot of negativity about stand-up classes is based around the idea of you're either, number one, you got to be born with it. You can teach technique and formula, but you can't teach like a God-given talent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously you can work at your talent and practice and get better, like somebody who plays a guitar.
Right.
But I think that's really based around the fact of you got to just do it. You know, if you want to be a chef, you got to get in the kitchen and you got to just experiment. Trial and error. Let's see if these two flavors go together. Let me make a piece on a plate. But you ever watch those cooking shows and then they get like this, you know, master chef who's judging them, you know?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, like, they'll taste something that's so amazing and they'll go, how did you do that? They'll ask the, because so even the fucking, you know, the professionals can learn something new. Let me take something that you have to offer and apply it to what I already know.
Right.
You know, there's nothing wrong with a basics class.
No, but there is people that have like that God-given talent. It's like the difference between having the innate ability to like find the funny in something versus the classes that teach you how to take that and put it into a grid.
I lost you for a second.
Am I back? Am I good?
You're good now. Yeah, you glitched for a second.
But what I was saying is it's a difference between people that have an innate ability to find the funny in a subject and then a class that teaches you how to apply that idea and put it into a structured format that you could bring on stage.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you about your podcast because, I'm imagining – but you were homeschooled, right?
Yeah.
And to me, that's, you know, my whole life, I just went to a public school. And so do you think, I mean, there's probably some really cliche things, right? Like, do you feel like there's things that you missed out? How long were you homeschooled?
My whole life.
Your whole life, really?
Yeah.
What was the reason for that?
You'd have to ask my parents that one. But as far as I hear, my, or as far as I know, my parents were very overprotective. when we were young. Okay. And I have an older sister who apparently, when I was too young to remember, went to public school. She's the only one that went to public school out of us. She got into some trouble. My parents got scared and decided to homeschool the rest of us.
Gotcha. And do you feel like you're better off for it or worse off for it? Would you have rather have gone to public schools?
I think so. I have no regrets in the way I was raised, because when I look at some people that I know today, especially in LA, I'm glad I have the ethics that I have. And I'm glad that, I don't know, it's just family upraising, I guess.
Right.
But I'm sure there's things I missed. If people ask me, would I ever homeschool my kid? I say no. I probably wouldn't do that to them. Then again, I probably wouldn't have a kid either. So
so if you were to send your kid to public schools, do you think that there is some sort of value that they would get from that that maybe like you miss? Like, what would that value even be?
I don't know about a value, but they would probably miss having a lot of friends, you know, making friends, going to proms and dances and hearing about
okay.
There's stuff that I didn't get to do. I didn't do any of that shit. Yearbook and just memories. And, you know, I watch on TV and movies the feeling of high school reunions and all that stuff. Like, I don't know anything about that shit. My high school reunion is when I go to a comedy club and I run into guys I started with when I was 20 years old. And I'm like, oh, shit, we're both still here, man. You know,
that's a fucking better reunion, bro. Let me tell you, I having gone to public schools, I missed out on all that shit. I never went to a fucking dance. I never went to prom. I went to my eighth grade dinner dance. And that was fucking bizarre because I lived in the hood. So when my eighth grade dinner dance rolled around, my grandmother dropped me off in like a fucking 87 Buick. And, you know, I got out of there. You could hear it coming down the road because it was a fucking hole in the exhaust and all kinds of crazy shit. And I get out of the Buick and I'm standing there waiting for my friends to show up. Meanwhile, limousines are pulling up and dudes are getting out of limousines in powdered blue suits with pimp hats and canes, like coming out to fucking Nelly songs and shit, you know, all this crazy crap. And then, you know, once we got inside and I just like stuck to the walls and ate food and tried to, you know, get away from everybody. But that was the only experience I had. And then as far as the reunion goes, like my reunion just rolled around. I didn't fucking go to that shit. And it was weird, dude, because it was like, it was an excuse for adults to fall back into the slots that they existed in high school. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, if you were the cool kid in high school, you were the fucking cool kid at the, even if you were, you know, 30 years old and an aspiring rapper, but still hadn't made it and, you know, had like several kids by several different women or whatever. Suddenly, for one night, you were fucking cool again. You know what I mean?
But I mean, that's the American experience of growing up. Everybody right. goes through that. You know, your mom dropping you off in the old car. That's just a part of growing up. It's character building too. You know, you go back and you think about that when you're older and you laugh and you love your mom for it later on. And you know, I have my own memories too, but none of them are similar to what most kids had because they were all
right.
I always tell people a really funny thing to think about is that the first time I ever stepped foot in a school was to perform in it as a comedian.
Oh, that's fucking bizarre. Did you feel weird? Like, did it live up to your expectations of what the inside of a fucking school looks like?
No. Schools on TV are always clean.
Oh, dude, no, they're filthy and disgusting. Are you kidding me? They're fucking filled with little animals.
Yeah, dude. The school, you watch, like, Boy Meets World, and they got, like, brand new painted lockers.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're all hanging out by them and shit. Even after the bells rang, they're still just like hanging out, leaning up against their locker, having conversations. In public school, the teachers are in the hallway screaming at you to get to your fucking class before the next bell goes off. Yeah, so the bell goes off, you hit the hallways, you go to your fucking lockers, and every doorway you pass, there's just teachers everywhere clapping like your fucking lap dogs. Like, get there faster, faster!
Think about like a high school movie and they're in the auditorium and that end scene with the romantic dance, you know, and the band is up there playing. That looks like a Bill Burr fucking Netflix special stage that they got. And then you go to I went to a real auditorium to do a comedy show for like it was like to raise money for some high school football uniforms or something. It was my first time ever in a school. I'm like, fuck, this place is fucking dirty.
Oh, you know, it's a shithole.
I felt like I was in a VA hospital or something.
Yeah, like a VFW, like one of those halls where it just kind of barely is a hall. It's just a square room for you to have an event in.
Yeah, dude, totally.
The fucking locker rooms always smelled like, you know, 10,000 ball sacks.
Oh, jeez.
It was the worst thing in the world. You know what I'm, you know what you, I guess you didn't really miss out on it, but I don't think it was, my generation, because I'm only 28 years old, right? So I think I just made the cut for not having locker rooms where everybody was ass naked. Like, that was always a thing that you saw on television, was like, I was mortified to go to high school because I thought that I was going to have my dick and balls out in front of everybody, and then I was just going to have to, like, put my hands on my hips and own that shit. And that doesn't happen. Nobody's got their ass cheeks out in high school locker rooms. We're all wearing basketball shorts. Everybody was wearing basketball shorts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was just like one of these. And the other illusion that everybody creates is that whole, you know, Sadie Hawkins dance or whatever. Because at my school, it was everybody was grinding their asses on each other. And like that was it was bizarre, dude. Like, teachers always had to get in and separate you, because during my childhood is when, like, I don't know what you would just like grinding, when grinding got big, when chicks were grinding their ass against you, and that's how you would dance. Yeah. And so,
what was that, just, like 99?
Yeah, well, that was early 2000s. Yeah. So, just middle school kids grinding asses against each other, and teachers just fucking panicked, just not knowing what to do at all, because that's what the DJ was playing. And that's the only way that you dance to that music, because you're not grabbing hips and slowly swaying to fucking the Little John and the East Side Boys.
If they could only see the kids now, those teachers would lose it.
Yeah, they're all out of their fucking minds. So one of the cool things is that you're currently working like side by side with Joey, right?
I mean, I wouldn't say side by side. I mean, we've been friends for 9 years, and in those 9 years, I've worked with him on the road, either emceeing or featuring or working my way up. And, you know, he's got his rotation of guys that he has open for him, and I'm one of them. So, you know.
So you guys have a pretty close relationship then?
Oh, man, we're good friends. Sorry, my dog is here. That's why I've been
Dude,
like,
do not apologize. That's a beautiful dog.
Thanks, man. That's why, like, people probably wonder why I kept moving like this. I was petting my dog. He's been on the floor this whole time.
I thought you just had insanely itchy ankles.
No, I got the dog.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, one of the things that is appealing to me about the world of stand-up is just that the community of stand-up is so appealing. It's like, just to be able to hang out with people that get it. You know what I mean? That is important, because in everyday life, in your average work scenario, it's like, you know, you're fucking, most of your coworkers don't get it. Like, I've been a welder and a fabricator for years now. And it's like, you know, I share the shop with like a bunch of old dudes that have never done anything but weld. And so my sense of humor just is bizarre to them, you know, because I'm super animated and I just can't like sit still for more than a few seconds. And I'm always cracking weird jokes and, you know, so part of my dream is like, oh, man, how cool would that be to just be able to share a room with a bunch of other people that just fucking get it? You know, that seems like a little bit of paradise.
In that sense, I guess I am blessed. I never really thought about it. But, yeah, I mean, there's a group of people that I feel comfortable with. And, you know, it's fun to be with a bunch of comics that all kind of get you. But then there is the other hand, where there's always comics that are, like, trying to give you tags for your jokes. Words and stuff, and what people don't realize, I'm not trying to be like a dick and be like, well, I don't want your tags, you know. I always just say, okay, cool, thank you, man. And like, it never really has anything to do with where I wanted that joke to go,
right?
Like, thinking, but you don't say that, you just go, okay, man, I'll consider it, you know. And but you don't realize that there's a group of people that you can write with, and that's about it. Everybody else, you can't write with them. Like, young comics, they want to have writing sessions. Let's all get together, have a writing session. That's great, but like, you got to figure out who you can write with.
What is that like? You just sit in a fucking room and pull a notebook out and start like spitballing ideas around?
Man, young guys do that. When you're starting out, you do that. Yeah, I did that a few times, and you just like, hey, what do you think about this? This is a premise I have, and you throw it out, and then like a bunch of guys will go, You can go this way with it. You can go this way with it. And some of it like might actually be great ideas. It might be great work. But then you get too many cooks spoiling the soup. And one guy wants to take another direction. Another guy wants to take another direction. If you can do a writing session, you got to be with a person that gets your comedy and you have similar writing styles and they know where you're going with the bit.
Right.
And they're going to give you ideas that will keep going in that direction, as opposed to like sometimes somebody just the other night gave me a tag and they're like, what about this? And I'm like, bro, I understand that you thought of a funny line. Like, you're right, that is funny. But don't you see that that takes it in the opposite direction of the point I'm trying to make?
Right, where you're trying to build this whole structured bit around it. It's like a scaffolding.
Yeah.
And you're taking it in a complete different direction.
I'm not going to move a bit in a different direction just to get a quick laugh. Like, I'm trying to build towards something. And if you have no point in your jokes, if you have no point in the content of your conversation, then what's the point? Like,
right.
To young comics out there, you know, it's really easy to build your set once you start asking yourself, what am I trying to say?
Right.
You know, and you can often find your setup, you know, like you're like, I don't know how to go into this joke. I don't know how to set it up. Ask yourself, what am I trying to say? Like, what's the point of this? And if it has a point, you'll usually find your setup too.
Right. And that's also, like you mentioned before, just a kind of a matter of muscle memory. You know, where it's just like you do it over and over again, and eventually you'll kind of create those grooves for your thought process to fall into.
Yeah,
I would imagine. But having done stand up for, you know, over 10 years now, and your podcast, would you say for nearly two?
Yeah, maybe a little more. I've been doing it longer than that, but I don't really count it because it was off again, on again. You know,
right?
And learning how to podcast too. You know, you got to get good at it.
Yeah. And in that regard, you ever just, I mean, how many times have you gotten to the point where you just feel like giving up? Because I know myself personally, it's like I'll run into things, silly shit. You know what I mean? Where it's like I'll have a technical difficulty, an episode will go badly. Somebody that I wanted to get on will like decline something. Yeah. And or I'll get some like shit feedback. And it's just that little fucking demon slips into your head where it's like, you suck, bro. What are you doing this for?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, I mean, that's got to be, I imagine, especially in stand-up where the feedback is so immediate.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had to have run into those moments where it's just like you just want to toss the towel in, dude.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've thought about it with stand-up. I've thought about it with podcasting all the time. Because when you're starting out podcasting and no one knows who you are and you keep checking, you keep getting those little tiny numbers.
Yeah, dude, I'm right there.
Do I really want to do this? Why am I still doing this? But you know what, man, I enjoy it, and the people that listen enjoy it, and I've never lost listeners. I just kept gaining them, which means that I didn't have people stop listening, you know, which was good. But yeah, sometimes you do all the time. I ask myself, like, why am I doing this for? I thought about, like, yeah, it's so hard with stand up and work and making money and podcasting and trying to get spots and then like a co-host and guests, you know, guests canceling, and then you got to get somebody else. It's so much. Like, what am I doing this for? You know, and then every now and then something will remind me what I'm doing it for, you know? You know, I got sponsors. Like, as soon as I started to get those sponsors, I was like, wow, okay. And then first time I got a paycheck from one of the sponsors, which wasn't much, and I don't get them that often, but I was like, wow, like, it kind of kept me going. Like, there are people listening, you know? And then, but most importantly, as a stand-up, when I go do shows, when I go perform, and afterwards someone will tell me, like, hey, man, like, I came out because I listened to your homeschool podcast, and like, I wanted to come see. When you start to see people showing up in the shows, it's a really great feeling, even if it's only two a show,
you know? Right.
This last, over New Year's, I did Phoenix, Arizona. I
played okay.
over the New Year's week, and it was 8 shows or something in 6 days, something like that. And all 8 shows had at least one person that was from the homeschool podcast in the audience. And it's a great feeling. And that just goes, oh yeah, that's why I do it. Keep going. Yeah. You don't see the progress. You go months without seeing anything and you go like, shit, should I keep doing this? But yes, keep doing it. Like, you know, it's worth it.
Right. It's great because it's like that's the beginnings of creating your own crowd. You know what, yep, I mean? Like, one day when it goes far enough, a majority of the people that will be sitting in the show will be direct fans of you, which is great because they'll get it all.
That would be amazing, dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
man, that's definitely a goal of mine. I can't wait to get there.
Well, listen, man, we're creeping up on 40 minutes here, and I know you got a set that you're doing tonight. I don't want to keep you any longer, but I wanted to thank you so much for giving me your time, and you know, it was really an honor to have you on.
If you have anything else you wanted to ask me or throw at me, I mean, I got a minute left. I'm fine.
Five.
It's up to you, though.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to be an animal and you could be any animal, what animal would that be?
Shit, bro. That's a weird question. I don't know.
You ever see what's it called? A pangolin or something like that. It's like an armadillo, but it's got these fucking killered armor. Dude, I am not shitting you. After this is over, I'm going to send you a picture of it. Right. It's a pangolin or something. I've never seen one before. They look like a fucking armadillo. They roll up into a ball, but they're made of armored spikes. It's kind of a bummer because they're like hunting them down and killing them for their scales or whatever because they're badass. But I'm going to use this as an opportunity to say, if I fucking could, I would be one of those, dude, just because they're tough looking.
Yeah, dude, like, I love dogs. I'm a huge dog person, and I always try to, you know, help out whenever I can with, like, dog shelters and, like, try to, you know, if I don't know if you're on Twitter, but I'm always retweeting, like, people that go, like, adopt dogs and stuff like that. But I don't know if I would want to be one because every animal I see how humans treat them. And I'm
You
know?
But if you got to be a dog that got with, like, some dope-ass family. And all they did was just, like, smother you, feed you awesome shit, and you just got to go, like, tear ass around the backyard, rip some shit up, and then sleep all day? That's beautiful, man. That's beautiful.
Yeah, like this guy right here. He's got a pretty good family, I think.
What is he, a pit bull?
Yeah. I got him at a pound, actually. I rescued him from one of those kill shelters.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, man, I've had him, I don't know, maybe four and a half years now. He's great.
You know, I was talking to one of my guests that was on, Eric Lundy. He was I think like a wiener dog, but we got into this conversation about how like people don't get it, man. People get dogs and they don't realize how much attention some of them need. Like a pit bull is like a high energy dog. It needs to be like worked out. It needs to go on walks. It needs to, you know what I mean? Like some dogs need a job. Like a German Shepherd needs a fucking job. He needs to feel like he's in charge of something. You know what I mean? But people just get dogs because they're dope looking. And then next thing you know, this thing's got all kinds of neuropathy issues and shit. And it's because, you know, they didn't know that they got a Rottweiler and Rottweilers need jobs and they also need a shit ton of exercise. You know what I mean? It's like,
dude,
people don't realize it. House.
I got another human being. It's like having a kid, you know? I'm fortunate that my wife, works from home, so she's with them all the time, and she takes them on walks, and yeah, so she's always here with them.
Yeah, because people don't realize it. A lot of people get, like, you ever see somebody who gets a dog and it's just like in the backyard all the time, like chained up to something?
I hate it, dude. I feel so bad,
bro. What are you doing? Why did you do that? Why did you get that dog so that it could hang out in your backyard like it's a fucking lawn decoration? Like, I don't understand.
Dude, there's other countries that just, like, fucking abuse them, and it's just so normal to beat dogs. Mexico, there's, like, so many homeless dogs, and, like, there's so – it's so, like, not – it's not illegal to beat them. But I mean, there's so many more countries besides – I mean, like, dude, in Asia, they're, like, fucking – they eat them.
Oh, man. Like, I was listening to Bobby Lee talk about that, and I forget how it came to be, but, like, after I learned about it from him – on his show about how, like, it's, you know, culturally normal to have, like, this dog-eating festival. I saw, like, some footage from it, bro, and I don't want to get deep, but it was just, like, it's crazy, the detachment. There's, like, a massive detachment from, like, empathy towards them. Like, they don't look at them like – but the crazy thing is, like, I don't know what to liken it to because they don't look at them like they're dogs, but they certainly don't look at them like I look at fucking anything. Like, I wouldn't suddenly – go like, it's just a pigeon, bro, and like curb stomp a pigeon. So the way that they're behaving towards them, I'm like, oh my, part of me is like, I guess it's just, you know, who am I? The culture is different and shit, but also fuck you.
Yeah,
fuck you.
I can't watch those videos when people, I know that some people are doing a good thing, like, oh my God, look at these assholes doing this to dogs. I can't watch them. Like, it sticks in my brain forever. I can't shake it. It's like, I know that they do it to cows too, but like, I don't know. Certain countries have certain regulations, you know, or it's humane. But then there's some countries that, like, they just, like, I see videos of people with dogs in the back of a pickup truck with a cage, and they're all just stacked on top of each other, still alive, and they want to, like, and then they're just going to go butcher them, and it's...
It's dark, dude. You know, the thing that gets me, too, is, like, when you've got, like, whatever it is, if you've got cows or something, and you're, and you know, they're treated badly on this fucking factory farm.
I'm not a vegetarian, but I try to avoid meat as much as possible, you know? Yeah.
I like Rogan's approach where it's like, you know, you should hunt what you eat. Like, that's cool. If I could do that, I would do that. But, I mean, I could do that. I'm just a lazy bitch. But, you know, to me, it's like the quick death of one animal versus being a part of the fucking immense factory farming shit that's going on. And the thing that gets me about the factory farming thing is, like, there's always these horror videos of some dude just, like, stomping the shit out of a cow. And I'm like, if they have to die, why in the shit are people like, who's the dude that hired the dude to stomp out the cow? Why are you stomping out the cow? It should be as quick as possible, bro. Like, yeah. I've seen some dark shit where I just don't understand. I don't get, you know, I'm always going to eat meat. I don't think that I'm going to go vegetarian. But to me, it's like there's no reason for an animal to suffer all the way up until the moment that it dies. That doesn't make fucking sense to me.
Yeah, no way. I agree with you on that one. Yeah, I couldn't ever be a vegetarian either. But like, I just try to just cut out red meat for, you know, my diet. I mostly just do fish. But occasionally, yeah, you know, I'll have meat still. I'm not going to give myself an unrealistic goal saying I never will, but I will.
And to me, it's the same thing, though. It's like if you eat fish, I'm still massively you know, disturbed by somebody that's just like abusing a fish for whatever reason.
Yeah, just
like you catch the fish and you fucking put the thing out of its misery and you cook it up and eat it and we have a good time. There's no reason to do terrible things to it up until the moment of its fucking death.
Yeah, I can't watch that stuff, dude. It fucks with me.
I feel like that's for sure prison. Like, you should probably go to jail. Not because you've committed like in a, you know, a atrocious crime, but because like, oh, that's in you? There's like that something's in you that you like doing that. Yeah, for sure. You get to spend some time in a cage for a while.
Totally, dude. I'm with you.
I think so. But, yeah, man. So, what's...
Can I plug some shows I got coming up?
Please plug some shows. Absolutely, brother.
So, by the way, follow me on Instagram, Twitter. I'm always posting my podcast and what shows I have coming up on their homeschool podcast. But for right now, March 13th, I kind of have a big deal coming up in Phoenix, Arizona. It's for one night only. I'm not doing a long set, but I'm at the House of Comedy. I'm doing like only like 7 minutes, but it's a huge showcase to get into to showcase for Montreal. So that would be great if I can get into the Just for Laughs Festival. So if you're in the Phoenix, Arizona area, please come out and I like to pack that room with my supporters. You know what I mean? Also, April 20th, so 4/20. I'm performing at the Workaholics House. It's the house where they filmed Workaholics. In the backyard, they do a comedy show. So I'll be there on 4/20, and that's in Van Nuys, California. And it's all on my social media.
All right, and where can people find you on Twitter and Instagram and such?
It's Augustino Zoida on everything, at Augustino Zoida on everything, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I don't have a Snapchat because, you know, I'm not a 13-year-old girl. And people don't know how to spell my name. I'm sure that you'll have the correct spelling on your description here on the podcast, right?
Don't worry, I got you.
Cool.
All right, brother. So everybody go check out the Homeschooled podcast as well. And thank you so much, Augustino, for taking the time and doing this for me. I really appreciate it. And it has been an honor.
Thank you. It's been great to be on. Thank you. It's an honor to be on. I appreciate you asking me.
Thank you very much, brother. You have a good show tonight.
Thank you, man. Have a good one.
Later.